You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Why We Watch, the show for fans, by fans, about fans. I am Mags and today we're having a bit of a break from the norm. It's normally a wrestling show, I speak to wrestling fans and wrestling content creators, but today I'm kind of veering off into like another subject that I cover in the Five Rounds podcast. I'm speaking today with my co-host and my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you today?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm okay, excited for this. I've wanted you to actually be on the show of Why We Watch basically since it started, because I know that you, as a kid, you was really into wrestling and you kind of moved away from it into MMA, and I just wanted to like talk to you about that process almost. Why We Watch is proud to be working with powerslam.tv. You can use our code MAGS to get yourself a 30-day free trial and watch up to 4,000 hours of quality independent wrestling content. Just make sure you sign up with your laptop for the code to work, and then after that you can download the Android app or the App Store app and watch this amazing content from powerslam.tv.
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
So, we'll go with the first question. Normally I go with what's your first memory or experience of wrestling, but seeing as we are covering MMA today, what's your first memory or experience of MMA?
Well, back when I was actually still in primary school, I saw, obviously there were adverts on telly, but it was more to do with when you started watching it, and then obviously me and Mars started watching it with, and it was, that's what it just got me up, where the how exciting it were for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't particularly pin down the first time I watched UFC especially. MMA is a different kettle of fish, but UFC especially, it was the one that comes to mind. And I know I've watched before this one, but the one that really stands up in my mind is when we watched Rashad Evans taking on Michael Bisping. And that's when I think I really got that bug for UFC, the UFC style of MMA. Looking back at like that time, what do you think it was about MMA that really made you like stand up and take notice?
Well, one big thing back when I was a kid, obviously growing up in the Burnley area as a young boy, like getting born in the late 90s, a big thing was boxing, and a lot of people obviously knew about WWE and obviously boxing. They were the two like big sports apart from like football. But obviously, yeah, when I was growing up, if you could get to a boxing gym, get to a boxing gym. But when I first saw a mixed martial arts bout, I think it, pretty sure it was one of them, it was so early in the card, I think it was like James Toney versus Randy Couture, maybe earlier than that, but that's one of the ones that stand out to me that got it more exciting, where it was like James Toney, Randy Couture, he was just a big wrestler, and that's what led me into watching mixed martial arts more than wrestling. I was a big wrestling fan as a kid, and then seeing Randy Couture actually being an American wrestler and actually getting into an octagon and fighting for real and actually proving to people that wrestling might be scripted, but some of the stuff they still do is still wrestling at the end of the day. And that's what got me hooked on it, with him being able to use some of the stuff I seen growing up and like, that actually works, wow. And that's what stands out to me the most.
Yeah, you mentioned about being born in Burnley and the kind of that area that Burnley had a reputation for. Obviously now it's made great strides in it, and it's quite a nicer place to live. But when you were younger, you was always like a fighter. Now, I don't mean that in the way that you would go out causing trouble and causing fights. What I mean was you would never back down from a fight. You would always defend yourself. How do you feel that MMA has helped you with that kind of that attitude?
Well, there's only one man I've got to thank for that, and that's Alan Clarkin. And the way he helped train me was, obviously when I was a kid, and yeah, you are right, I wouldn't back down from a fight, still wouldn't. But when I were a kid, I were a lot more angrier than I can be today. So Alan helped me like control that anger, not being able to, having to defend myself straight away. But that was the main thing that MMA helped me, was being able to actually control my own body rather than just lashing out because I'm feeling like a threatened situation. But that's, and I think a lot of people could take that away from mixed martial arts or any sort of fighting.
Right, so you obviously mentioned Alan, and Alan's been a massive influence on not only your like MMA like career so far, but also the career of a legitimate world champion and a legitimate legend in the UFC, Michael Bisping. What do you take from Alan's time and work with Michael Bisping, and how do you apply that to how you train and how you like are progressing?
Alan Clarkin is just so well knowledged on the game of mixed martial arts and fighting itself. He's such, not only a well-rounded coach, but he was a well-rounded fighter, and for his age, he still is a well-rounded fighter. But the way he trained Michael Bisping is the exact same way he's training me today. It's basically no-nonsense training, where it's, you get to the gym, you do the work, you put the work in, you get the results you need. And that's what Alan does. He pushes you, and if you really want it, and really want it the way I want it, and Michael Bisping wanted it before he made a huge success, he helps you do that. He'll push you to your maximum. He'll expect you to be the first one to the gym, the last one out the gym. He'll expect you to be the workhorse that you need to be until you get into the spot of where, like I said, one of his best and biggest students in Michael Bisping got. But like I said, that's the exact same way he trains me and many other guys today. It's just no-nonsense training. I get to the gym, I start a warm-up on the bag, and then from that warm-up on the bag, he just puts me through another like 15-minute warm-up, which absolutely kills you. And then the rest of it is just all straight knowledge. And the way he applies it is everyone can understand it. If you get mixed up with a stance or with your physique, he'll help you understand what you need to do, where your feet need to be, where your hands need to be, where your head needs to be. He'll help you understand your timing, your accuracy. He'll help you understand when it's necessary to do something and when it's not necessary to do something. So that's why I'm a British champion today, is all to do with the way Alan Clarkin trains his students.
Well, we'll get on to the British tournament and obviously the world in a little bit. But when you first started going to Black Knights, which is Alan's gym, famous again, like I said, because of how Michael Bisping basically turned his life around using Alan's teachings. We obviously all know the story of Michael Bisping. He was basically a tearaway, close to going to getting like into some major trouble with the police, and basically credits Alan with turning his life around almost. Now, when you first started training, or started to look into training into MMA, you was predominantly good at striking, like with fists and kicks and stuff like that. But whilst you've been working with Alan, your like wrestling and submission have almost overtaken that skill. Where do you feel that your strongest like suit lies?
Well, from doing it, like I said, I started out in boxing and then worked my way into mixed martial arts, like a lot of people did do back when I were a kid. But the strongest game I've definitely got is the ground game. It's just that's what I feel comfortable at. Even though I feel comfortable well-rounded, that's where I feel more comfortable. And that is my playground, is on the ground. I know what to do there. I know how to make people do stuff. And there's one funny quote is in jiu-jitsu, is what is not always said to be cocky, but it's always said because it's a funny quote when you're actually training it. It's jiu-jitsu, being able to fold clothes whilst people are still in them. So it's that's what gets me excited to train, is not only the new stuff you can learn, is when you're on the ground, the stuff you can do, the submissions, the body move, being able to control someone else's hips whilst moving your own, posturing, bridging, everything, even getting a body triangle on someone. When you get that and you feel that in that comfortable position in control, it's a lot of people start to understand and grasp what to do, what not to do. Don't leave your chin exposed, don't leave your neck exposed. Tuck your limbs in, and it's just one of them. It's just a more technical way of fighting, because anyone can throw a punch, but not everyone can land a punch. But there's not everyone can learn how to fight on the ground until you're taught it.
So, comparing like your fandom of mixed martial arts, especially like the UFC, as before you started training and to after you started training, how do you think that training in MMA, knowing what these guys put themselves through on a daily basis, how does that alter the way you look at the MMA that you watch?
Well, the one thing I take away from watching it, what a lot of other people don't look at it, I like to watch it because I find it entertaining. Obviously it's entertaining to me, but because I am a fighter, I look at it as an analyst sort of thing, like, what can I spot that he does wrong? And if I can spot a professional fighter doing something wrong, then I've definitely got a chance at spotting an amateur fighter doing something wrong. And that's what I look at. I look at if I can read a fighter, just if he throws three hooks and you know what's coming afterwards, maybe he threw a hook and a leg kick, another leg kick, a hook and a leg kick. You know at some point there's either going to be a leg kick or a hook and a leg kick coming. Mm-hmm. So it's being able to read that sort of body language.
Yeah, and watching the shows, I mean, obviously we watched the shows together way before we even had the inkling of having a podcast, but watching the shows with you and with your brother Romario, and with you both having that kind of analytical mindset where you were, you're not just watching as a fan, you're watching as someone who knows the intricacies and the like the technique in the sport. And I feel like I've learned a hell of a lot more in being able to like analyse the fights just by being able to like listen to your experiences and what you as a fighter would do if you were in certain situations in them fights. So going on to that, the UFC product, who were like some of your early favourite fighters?
One of my first favourite fighters, even though I watched a lot of fights. My first favourite fighter were always Dan the Outlaw Harder. I've even got it on my bookshelf. Part Reptile, Dan Harder. One of the best books anyone can ever read. Suggest you go and buy it. Not sponsored at all, but Dan Harder, shout out. Dan Harder, it's just the things that guy could do in mixed martial arts, and obviously he started out in Taekwondo, although I think he started out as a 9-year-old boy. At one point he didn't want to give it up, but he got talked around by it and he carried on, and I'm glad he did, because otherwise we wouldn't have got that. One of the greatest fights ever with Joe St. Pierre, when Joe St. Pierre got him in an arm blow, and we were able to basically fight it off for like
a full round.
And he's just one of them fighters. He comes to fight. He's a traditional fighter. He'll stand and bang with you, or he'll go to the ground with you. And like I said, because he was not a hometown boy, but he was from Nottingham, so it's relatively close to where we are. He was always the one who I'd root for, because it's like I'd want him to win, not because it's like if he wins, maybe like US mixed martial arts had like take off a lot more in the UK, and maybe a lot more people would have a chance, which I'm glad it has done. A lot of people do, but it was just more because he was close to our home, so it was like I was always rooting for him to win.
So when obviously we watch the events every single week, and we tend to like make comment on the crowd, and usually UFC crowds are quite almost like fair weather fans, a lot of them. Not saying that they all are, but there is a lot of fans who are literally don't really know a lot about MMA, and you get crowds that are booing like technical fighting and wrestling and stuff like that. So how do you think that learning about the intricacies and the skill involved in MMA has helped you as a fan of UFC in terms of like enjoying different assets and facets of the product?
Well, that's it. Once we'll get to the crowd actually booing. A lot of people boo because they sort of, like you saying, they don't understand it, because they just think, oh, it's two people taking a rest, they've slugged it out, it's taking a rest, it's boring. But once you even do just a couple of lessons in mixed martial arts, you'll learn to understand that they're not, fair enough, they might be taking a second to take a breath in, but it's just more getting to grasp of where you're fighting, like timing your opponent. So when you're up against the fence wrestling or on the ground, being in basically a jiu-jitsu match, it's more working and time, because when you get to these big events, big main cards with these elite fighters, they're not just elite fighters because they're nobodies and they've got no fights. They're elite fighters because they've fought the best and beat some of the best. And they know if you make one mistake, they're going to make you pay for that. And no one, especially in UFC, wants a loss, because everyone wants a title shot.
Yeah, I think for me, obviously, starting off as a normal fan like everybody else, the knockouts were exciting. The knockouts were what you wanted to go and see. And the wrestling kind of, because you don't understand it, you don't understand what's actually happening, it kind of can look a little bit boring. But once you know what's actually happening in that wrestling, you know that those fighters are having to make thousands of little micro calculations to know exactly where each body part should be, what they're trying to do with each like limb, how they're trying to slide into position. I tend to enjoy the ground game a lot more, because you can see their minds working, you can see how they can manipulate their opponents without even the opponents knowing how to be manipulated. And I think that's something that a lot of UFC fans kind of like miss, because they're watching for the big knockout rather than the technical skill.
that's it. And that's one of the biggest, like I said, since I started out in mixed martial arts, that's one of the biggest aspects of the game I've learned is the ground game. And like I say, you got everything on point with what you just said then. You are looking for opportunities. You are looking to where you can move. You are looking to if you can slip that leg out or being able to get back control, or if you're inside control, being able to slip your leg over to get full mount. It's such hard work in a professional mixed martial arts bout to pull some of the stuff off. But when they do, it's just spectacular.
Yeah. So you mentioned about Dan Hardy being like your first real like inspiration in MMA, and I know full well that Dan Hardy was like literally the tipping point for you to start training in MMA, and you've gone and you've absolutely done super, more than we ever expected. But how does learning MMA like alter who you like enjoy watching? Like we mentioned just then, when you first start, you like the big hitters, you like the knockouts. But how has like learning MMA like changed who you like enjoy watching?
Well, it's I'd be lying if I said it didn't change, but it of course it has. Like I say, everyone likes a knockout. When I started watching it, knockout's one of the best things you could see. Obviously not for the people who got knocked out, but it was one of the most kick-ass things you could do. But being able to watch it for so long and experiencing firsthand what it's actually like and what it actually takes to become a fighter, like I said, you start to respect a lot more aspects of the game. So if you, like I said, if you start like I did, start out as a striker, you'll find yourself respecting the ground game a lot, because A, you don't know it, B, when you go into there, you're a striker, so you think, oh, I'm going to outbox anyone, and then they take you down, and next minute, you know, you're tapping out, and you're like, how did you do that? Like, I thought we were just going to stand, it's like, it's mixed martial arts, not boxing. Or if you, like I said, if you transition from BJJ or judo, and you come over to mixed martial arts, it's exactly the same. If you can't take that opponent down and you're shooting in and they're giving you a swift uppercut and it's like, oh, I didn't expect that. It's like, that's what you've always got to chin up. So you respect different aspects of the game. I didn't know how to fight on the ground, so I needed to make myself be aware of, is that person shooting in? Right, do I need to get over or double unders? Like, do I need to sprawl? Do I need to what? What do I need to do? Do I pull guard? So it's all different stuff that you've split seconds to think. Because once your opponent shoots in, you've got to know what to do in that split time. Because if you double think it, you're already on ground. He's already got top control. And that's one of the things I learned as being a boxer. I already knew sort of well of a little bit of my reach and my distance, but that time, and if you were to throw a punch like I did, I got tucked down a lot when I didn't know it. So you just find yourself respecting, like I said, respecting a lot more aspect of the game, and in that case for me, it was the ground game.
Yeah. So obviously outside the obvious ones of Bisping and Hardy and probably the likes of Paul Daly, who are some fighters who really inspire you to like continue in MMA?
Well, there's still a few, and one of them is actually from London, and a lot of people might dislike him, but I like his fighting style, and that's Michael Venom Page. Obviously, he fights in Bellator, he's not in UFC, but obviously because again he's English, I'll root for him. But not only that, his one loss has come from Douglas Lima, which is not anything to basically be embarrassed about. And he's beat some top talent.
Yeah, he beat Cyborg and crushed his skull.
Exactly. Like I said, again, you would transition over, and that sort of stuff can happen in mixed martial arts. If you're shooting at the wrong time and someone throws a knee, look at a Cyborg skull. Just look at the x-rays after that. That's why you need to understand what goes on.
What usually happens in an MMA gym is they'll have plenty of fighters in, or plenty of people training in MMA, but it's quite a small percentage that actually can make that jump from training in it to actually competing in it. And you've been, fortunate is the wrong word, you've worked hard enough and you've learnt enough skills that Alan really saw something in you and he pushed you to get your MMA fighting license, obviously. So before we get into like the tournament almost, how do you feel that having that MMA license and having that ability to take amateur and professional fights, how do you think that like affected you in your life, in your everyday life?
It made me more cautious of fighting, let's put it that way, because I knew at any minute, well, I knew straight away when I walked to the gym, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to be. So when I got that license, one of the first things Alan told me was no fighting outside the gym. And I've like I said, I've respected that till this day. And touch wood, that still happens.
Touch MDF.
Well, yeah. But like I said, it made me respect not fighting outside the gym, because at any moment I knew if something could happen where I could get my license took off me and I wasn't able to compete, that'd be my dream basically like crushed like from that day. So that played a big part when I got that license.
So obviously we've waxed lyrical on five rounds about how you did in the British Arcor Open Championships. How do you feel that tournament went, and what was like the run up to it?
Well, the big run up to the fight is me coming back after obviously my back injury and putting in so much work and time and effort, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going for runs before work, after work, running home from work, putting the time and effort in, hitting the bags, hitting the pads, coming home from the gym and not taking anything to get to the gym, just running down and running back. Everything I needed to get back to where I used to be. And that was one of the hardest moments in my life, was the training to come back for that fight. But even though as much hard work, blood, sweat and tears went into it, there was so much positivity that came just out of that one fight camp. It was unreal, the support I got from other teammates, the support I got from Alan, and obviously, like I said, all the training that I did. And the one thing that just stuck in my head, that always pushed me, just not even doubt myself once, and every single time I thought to myself, this is getting hard. My baby girl weren't born at the time, but she was still in her mummy's tummy, and every single time I said to myself, you know, well, this shit's hard, I just always used to say, Thea, and just carry on.
Well, we'll get on to Thea in a minute, but I just wanted to touch on something you mentioned in that last answer, your back injury. Basically, give us a quick rundown of what actually happened. I mean, I obviously know what happened there, but give the listeners a quick rundown of what actually happened and how it affected you, not only physically because of the injury, but how it affected you like emotionally and mentally, and how you kind of recovered from that and became like almost a better fighter because of it.
Well, when it actually occurred is when I originally found out about my back injury, I actually had an accident on my bike. Luckily enough, the accident wasn't actually major. I was going relatively slow. It was just an oil patch that my front wheel just went. And I didn't injure myself in any way, but I thought, so I've just come off my bike. I'm pretty sure I've just hit my head. I'm just going to go to hospital to get checked out. So when I actually went to the hospital, they gave me a couple of x-rays. And then they said to they asked me if I like I hit my back or anything like that, and I'm like, no, I don't think so. So they asked me to go on for a couple more scans, CT scans, I think that's what you call them, I'm not too sure. And I had to go for a couple of them, and then they told me that I basically broke my back and I've broke a vertebrae in my neck. So I'm like, oh, why can I not feel it? And I'm like, I can feel that back pain, but not, I think I know if my back were broke. And they basically just said, like, your muscles are holding your back together. So that were a big shock when I found out about that. And I thought to myself, it's not that bad. It's not going to get any worse. It will only get better. Boy, were I wrong. that day when I came home, I thought, so like I said, I thought it's going to be fine. And then that night, it just hit me at once, like, oh, wake up, you got a broken back, do something. You got to do something about it. Like, baby's like going to be born soon, and you're not picking her up in a wheelchair. And like I said, it was just that, again, crawling moment of thinking, am I useless for getting this back injury that I didn't even know about? Obviously, with my wife and the way she were and the situation we were in, I just felt useless.
Yeah, and when something like that happens, it can obviously be massively devastating. You think basically your world's coming to an end, but what you've done is what could be used as inspiration for anyone who goes through a situation like this. You've not accepted the word no. You've trained and you've worked so damn hard, and from basically potentially where it was all over in terms of MMA, you've actually gone on to become a gold medalist in the ARCO British Open Championships. How did that make you feel, knowing the struggle that you come from, knowing that it was potentially all over, to now being literally the best in your division at that aspect of MMA?
It was one of the best feelings I literally ever had, knowing how much work and time I put in to everything I did, with how much focus and concentration I did. I was, like I say again, blood, sweat and tears went into my training camp. It just all felt amazing to actually be back in that situation that a lot of people are scared of being in front of someone who's willing to go toe to toe with you. But that's, I don't know if you can call me not normal or anything, but that sort of stuff excites me. And it's, when I were in there, I weren't nervous, I weren't overcautious or all like that. When I were in there, I just felt calm. It's like I were explaining to one of my good friends, when I were actually standing across from my opponent, I couldn't hear nothing. Like, obviously there were a lot of noise and anything like that, but I couldn't hear a single thing. It was just calmness, like, I know I should be here. This is where I should be right now. And I were able to show both aspects of my game. I were able to stand toe to toe with a great kickboxer, and were able to, like I said, read his timing. And as he threw a left hook, I dodged the first one and thought, that's my opening. As soon as you throw that again, I'm slipping and I'm double legging you. Like I said, it's on video, it's all proof. As soon as he threw that next hook, straight away, I picked him up and I was putting him straight on his back, and it were about, what, a minute something into the fight, armbar over.
And wow, and what an amazing day it was. Everybody was absolutely so proud. All your fight team, all your friends, all your family, were just, because we knew that this is what you'd wanted for so long, and you'd kind of like climb that mountain. But there's always another mountain to climb. There's always another peak to climb. So where is Carlos going after winning the British Open?
Oh, there's no other place I'm going apart from top. I've put too much work in it. And like I said, I'm 22. I'm not getting any younger. And a lot of people like to say it's a young man's game. I'm still a young man, and I beg to differ that claim. There's been a lot of people still fighting in the late 30s, but there's one place you're definitely going to see me soon, and that's in the UFC. It's without a doubt, how much work and time I've put into the gym and how much I want it more than anybody else, no one can stop me.
And that's a great like mindset to have, that you've had so much like go against you, and you've been able to defeat everything that's coming from to you. I have absolutely no doubt that if this is what you want, it will happen. I know how focused you get. I know how driven you are. You mentioned earlier about obviously being married and having a little baby. How has becoming a parent like affected your kind of mindset towards like MMA?
Don't get me wrong, even though I enjoy the ground game, I enjoy a good stand and bang. If you want to trade, I'll trade. I for a weird reason, I enjoy getting it in first. But it's made me more cautious, because obviously I'm not stupid. I know brain damage, concussions over time, and injuries do occur, and it's, but I don't want to forget my daughter's name at the age of 35. So it's made me a lot more open-minded to, is it worth doing this slugfest, or is it, let's just keep it technical up until needs be, sort of thing. And that's one thing it's changed about my thinking in my fighting ways, where it's my thinking in my fighting ways, where it's just more, let's not be stupid, be smart about this.
The thing with like a lot of combat sports and MMA in particular is that you're kind of always passing down to the next generation, if you understand what I mean. Like, for instance, you're training under the likes of Alan Clarkin, but whilst you're there, you're also showing the younger people techniques, and it's the kind of almost like a revolving door of like learning and training for people. So looking to the like the next generation, what advice would you give people who had a little bit of interest, or even if they didn't have that much interest in MMA, why would you say that it would be good for them to get into like MMA?
A lot of people in this day and age, and now some people might say I'm wrong, most people I'd imagine would agree with me, a lot of people say kids today are a lot more cotton fed. They're a lot more, people are a lot more softer on them. There's more dangerous stuff, and it makes people a lot more scared. And you can't blame the people who grow up being cautious of everything, being scared to get into altercations, being nervous, and basically at the end of the day, knocking the confidence down. And that's one of the best things about mixed martial arts, is don't matter how long it takes you to do, and it don't matter how long it takes you to pick it up. At the end of the day, if you go to your local mixed martial arts gym or like any boxing gym or anything like that, you'll get your confidence, you'll start opening up, you'll start to be able to be yourself, because no matter what, don't matter if someone doesn't like that person who you are, if they were to start an altercation with you, you could be smart enough to, if you can't resolve that situation by speaking, you always know, like Joe Rogan's case, you always know you're able to not hurt the person but defend yourself if needs be. So that's one of the best things about mixed martial arts. It's such a confidence builder.
Yeah, it kind of it's not all about the physical like skill and technique. It does give you a different kind of mindset almost, like. And one of the things that I've known from Alan's training is the respect. He always drills in respect, respect, respect. It's not about whether you can knock someone out. It's having a respect not only for your opponent, not only for the people on the street, but a respect for yourself almost. Like, you've worked too hard to let this go because of an argument or because of a fight.
That's it. There's two things in play when you train with a guy like Alan. Respect and dedication. Them are the, I say, going back to the young kids of today, a lot of people get bored of a lot of different stuff, and it's like if it doesn't work out in their favour straight away, it's like right on to the next thing, and they don't give stuff a little bit of time anymore. And like I said, I've been training mixed martial arts since I can remember. I can't even remember the day I just started. It just helps out in so many ways. It's It's a confidence builder. You build a self-respect for yourself and respect for others, and not being a loudmouth, cocky person, and like I say, being a good person in the base of the community, basically.
You can now get merch for While We Watch at redbubble.com/people/DAJKirby. Things like stickers, phone cases, and even mugs.
Right, let's do a little bit of MMA word association. I'm going to give you a word or phrase out of anywhere in the world of MMA, and you just literally fire back the first thing that comes to your head. Doesn't matter if it's a word, sentence, paragraph, bloody lines on a chalkboard, whichever comes to your head first. So we'll go with first a pretty easy one. Black Knight.
Best gym in the world.
Fair play. I mean, what more can you say? Next, we will go with submissions.
Quality.
I think this episode is going to be ending pretty soon, folks, because there's no follow-up. Go on, just give a bit of follow-up about submissions. What's quality about them?
Being able to... in submissions, it's totally different for different people, but for me, when you know you've got a good, like, this might sound like psychotic or something, but it's one of them mindsets I suppose you've got to have. But when you're choking someone out and you're seeing their eyes roll back and hearing them take the hard to get a breath and gasping for a breath, it's just satisfying.
Fair enough. Next, we'll go with a few fighters now, actually, and we'll go with Cain Velasquez.
One of the best heavyweights to have that sort of cardio is unreal. If he didn't have, obviously, that shoulder injury, he probably could have been the one to defend that belt more than Stipe. Mm-hmm. I'd say he's a quality fighter.
Yeah, I remember quite a while ago, there was a big fascination with like fight metrics in UFC, and they did some analysis on Cain Velasquez, and they said when he hit, before he had a rotator cuff injury, didn't he?
Yeah.
When he hit before the rotator cuff injury, it was like he could hit with the power of a bull at full pace. That's just absolutely mind-blowing that someone can hit you that hard.
Well, that's it. Well, when you're from Mexico, and a lot of people, obviously, when they say I'm going to bring a Mexican fight, and it's when you're in Mexico, that high altitude that you are, and you're training, you've been brought up in that basically like environment. The cardio in Mexico and from Mexican fighters is just unreal. They can just go for 12 rounds straight without stopping.
So next we'll go with the lighter divisions.
A lot of people, I'd like to think now, a lot of people are opening up and seeing the lighter divisions for what they are. Obviously, one of my favourite fighters, Demetrius Johnson, obviously didn't. If people said if fighters were millionaires, he'd be a billionaire by now, but so unfortunately it don't work like that. But obviously with the likes of Henry Cejudo, triple champ, being such an outspoken fighter now, and Conor McGregor coming up from featherweight, TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt. I know TJ Dillashaw had some fucking steroid issues, but with them being such like wild characters, I think it's brought more eyes to the lighter divisions, bar from like obviously the heavyweight and light heavyweight, middleweight knocking each other out. I think that's what's one of the things that's opened people's eyes to mixed martial arts, that what some of these small guys can do is just physically impossible for these big guys to do. And some of even the stuff you're still seeing today is still new, and it's like, whoa, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, it's always been like a thing in this house that it's a bugbear almost that the lighter divisions don't get the respect, and that's because we know
the technical skills that these guys are doing. So next, you alluded to it a little bit there, but what are your thoughts on steroid abuse?
It's straight up ours. Anyone who thinks taking a steroid is going to make you a better fighter, you're stupid. Yeah, anyone who takes steroids just loses my respect altogether. One of my favourite fighters growing up was, obviously I've said in previous episodes of the five rounds, was Anderson Silva. He lost every single ounce of my respect when I found out he took steroids. And it's just one of them things, it's like once you've built up to that sort of high calibre of fighter, when you're in that situation that people like me had absolutely given arm and a leg, and absolutely given arm and a leg to be in that situation, fighting for that UFC title, and you're fucking it up by taking steroids, I find that just pathetic. It's just disgusting.
Well, the last couple we'll go with, the first one, what do you feel about weight cutting and specifically like excessive weight cutting?
I think there should be more. I know in the last couple of years they've been trying to crack down on people cutting stupid amounts of weight and everything, and weight cutting can be seriously dangerous when people like these fighters are cutting like 20 pounds, 10 pounds in like a couple of days just to make weight, and it's just, I don't think it's right with the way I train at weight. It's that fight at 70, I train at 70, it's as simple as that. It's, I train at 70, I weigh in at 70, I fight at 70. It's the way it should be. And some of these fighters who, and I understand why they do it, they drop down to get a bit more of an advantage where it's like I might have a bit more of a reach, or I'm a bit more wider built, or when I can get rehydrated I can pack on that 4 or 5 extra pounds than my opponent. But it's just such a dangerous game to be playing in when you don't know how to do it right. Weight cutting can be seriously dangerous.
It definitely can, and it's one of the things that really annoys me about MMA in general, is that people are trying to get an advantage, and I totally understand that, but they're almost killing themselves to do it. Now for me, there's two easy solutions to this problem. One, have fighters having to weigh in over multiple days throughout the training camp so they have to maintain the weight, or two, introduce more divisions.
The other two options, the option A, what you said, that's the way we do it, is that's the way we in our gym think you should do it anyway. If you fight that way, train it that way, you're not going to have no mishaps. If you want to be a professional, you should be a professional. If you are known as a professional fighter, make weight. Sometimes, fair enough, it can be hard. Sometimes you might have a slippy day, some personal issues going on, fair enough. But what bugs me is fighters who are actually in a full training camp who are basically just slacking off, and then it's like coming up to fight week and it's like, shit, I can't shift that 2 extra pound, like, and I only get a 1 pound weight limit, like what's going on here? And that's when they lose a little bit more of my respect for basically missing weight. But like I said, it's such a dangerous thing to be messing about with.
And for the last one, we'll go with, now, if I was in your position, I would be choosing my words quite carefully. We'll go with potential future boss Dana White.
Before Dana White originally said it, it were a bit ago now, he obviously was obviously entertained by the words that were coming out of Chael Sonnen's mouth, and he said himself that he could potentially one day be the president. Obviously now we know that's changed. There's one person who in general who I think now could be the president of the UFC. I know it's probably not going to happen, but Michael Bisping.
Yeah, I suppose. For me, the one thing about like Dana White in general is, yeah, he's outspoken. Yeah, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff he says. Yeah, he gets a bit too personal and like almost like aggressive with his own like employees. But he's got such a passion for MMA that if he wasn't involved, MMA wouldn't be as big a sport as it is today. If he wasn't involved, UFC wouldn't be as big as an organisation it is today. I mean, he introduced MMA to the Fertittas when it was floundering, when it was banned everywhere, and he has worked basically tooth and nail, alongside with obviously the Fertittas who now got out of the MMA business, but he's worked tooth and nail to get MMA to these places. I mean, we're seeing it even now, it's now becoming legal in countries like France, who were absolutely staunchly against MMA. So as much as I give him shit on the show, and he never listens, so he's never going to hear my viewpoint, he probably don't give a shit about my viewpoint, but as much like grief as I give him, I've got to give him them props that without him, MMA wouldn't really be a thing.
Yeah, like you say, without him, a lot of people, I think MMA would still be struggling to make it big. But what he were able to do, and I know what a lot of people had, a fun fact for obviously this show is, when the UFC was actually getting sold, they were actually going under. They wasn't basically being able to afford to pay for the fighters and all the other stuff. It were actually Shane McMahon who actually went to his dad to see if like basically wanted to buy the UFC, and I think it were getting sold for 1 million. Vince basically turned around and just said straight no. So Dana White obviously saw the opportunity. Obviously he had stuff going on back home with the mafia. Well, I think positive with the mafia basically after him, so we had to relocate to Las Vegas. And as when he saw this opportunity and the stuff he were doing as a manager for the likes of Chuck Liddell and Tito, he were already involved with the UFC. So as soon as he got wind of UFC being up for sale, he's like, he got straight on the phone to, I think it was Lorenzo or Frank, we were one of them, said, listen, there's UFC, like, really got a problem. I think if we could do something about it, we could actually really make this thing work. And thankfully enough, the Fertittas actually invested the money into the company and let Dana White build it to what it is today. And that's one thing that you can thank Dana White for doing. He saw an opportunity, he took it, and he grew that like a flower.
Hey there, boys and girls, this is JR from View from the Top Rope, and you are listening to Why We Watch podcast exclusively on the Visionaries Wrestling Network.
Yeah, well, this has been a really interesting, unique, change for Why We Watch. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. I know that we do a podcast together with Five Rounds, but I know I kind of sprung this on you and you were a little bit nervous about it. Before we get to the sign off and the plugs and stuff like that, just give us a bit of a rundown of why Five Rounds came about, and basically what was the inspiration for it, and how has it grown into the show that it's become.
Five Rounds is one of the best ideas I think me and you both had, is when you started out in your podcast. I thought to myself, you know, I could, me and you could really do something here. I already know about farting, as I'm a farter, and that's something I'd actually enjoy, being able to talk to people and tell people about basically our lives, and when we analyse and watch UFC and other MMA farts.
With Five Rounds, obviously, it puts you in an analytical mindset, and you're already in that because of your MMA background. So how do you feel that being on a podcast about analysing MMA and UFC, how do you feel that that helps you in your training or your MMA career almost?
That's it. The Five Rounds pod, when we're when it first came about, and I took it as a positive, where it was like, oh, we get to actually talk about it, I get to analyse it more, and that'll work in, obviously, in my favour, in your favour. You were starting out as a podcaster, I were interested in what you were doing, and it was like, there's two ways, we could get our names out there, I could get my fighting name out there, and I could still learn and study what these other fighters were doing to make me a better fighter. And that's exactly what it's done since I started this, since we started the podcast, the Five Rounds. I've been able to pick up little bits more of that experience, knowledge, placement, everything that it needs to, what it needs to become well-rounded fighter.
Okay, I'm Matt Willis, and this is Graham Bagshaw. Welcome, you kid.
What am I supposed to do? You just introduced me. This should be the trailer. This is it. Listen to us Fridays on the Visionaries Wrestling Network. That's it. That's going. Send it out right now.
We're out of here.
Good. Bad. Yeah, so... thank you again, Carlos. Thanks for doing this. Where can people find you on social media? Where can they, like, basically potentially see, like, your farts and stuff like that? And also, where can they hear your voice on a podcast?
Well, you can find me on Twitter @Kirkby_Carlos. And you can eventually find me at... one of our two pages, that's either at the Five Rounds podcast, or one of the pages that I've got an idea for is a Facebook page, which is the Five Rounds podcast on there as well, to get our content out. And hopefully when it gets up and started, I would be able to not only live stream but put progress and obviously previous farts up on the Facebook page for the people to enjoy.
Brilliant. Again, thank you for doing this. You can find me on Twitter @DAJKirkbeck. You can find the show @WhileWeWatch. Again, Carlos, thank you so much for doing this. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.